Tiger. Good morning. So today, what are we talking about? Hello? Hello? Can you hear me? Ceci here. Is anyone there? Hi, my name is Ceci. I'm based in Berlin, and I want to welcome you to Sisi, the podcast where you see what others see. In this, our first season, we're talking about colors. I want to welcome and thank you, Dorit Elkanati, an Israeli art consultant and curator based in Berlin too, who will co-host this episode with me.
Hi, Ceci. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you for inviting me, and I'm ready to begin this ride. Our guest today is the painter Amnon David Ahr. Born in Tel Aviv, Ahr lives and works in Berlin for the past 8 years now. He is the first recipient of the prestigious Schiff Prize for figurative art, and his works were shown in numerous solo and group exhibitions worldwide, in museums as well as galleries. His last solo shows were exhibited at the Kunstverein Schwetzingen and Kunstverein Worms. His works appear in many important private and public collections. The curator of the Rembrandt House Museum in Amsterdam, Dr. Bob van den Boogert, described David Ahr as one of the greatest draftsmen of our time. So, welcome, Amnon. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Dear Amnon, we are in an audio podcast, so that our audience can picture you and your work. How would you describe yourself? And how would you describe your painting?
I would describe myself as very obsessive, hardworking, intuitive, chaotic yet orderly, overly serious, but cynical at times, maybe. And how would I describe my work? I'll describe it. I want to quote what I aim at from, I want to quote Picasso as for what is art and what I aim at. Picasso said that art is a lie whose intention is to tell the truth. Well, I don't know if this is what my work does, but this is definitely what I would like to achieve.
And before we zoom in and start delving into your works and your treatment of color, I would like to ask you, what role do colors play in your life? And maybe just for the listeners who can't see us, I would describe Amnon today. He wore especially for us his orange t-shirt with Miss Piggy on it.
So, it's not especially for you. I wear it on a daily basis. It's not. It's my daily uniform.
It's
no, okay. No, for you.
Because maybe it's a hint regarding the role of color in your life.
It's difficult to answer this question. I can tell you a little tiny anecdote from my childhood. I remember that running around this garden, and they had these extremely red colors and these flowers that were extremely red. I don't remember the name of them, but they eventually appear in one of my paintings. And I remember this intense feeling of how this red in the sun is just beyond words. And I was not fascinated, but flabbergasted by it. I also remember that when we started writing with a pen in, I think it was sixth grade or fifth grade, my dream was always to do this little line beneath the words with the fluorescent yellow. So I don't know if this is an answer to that, but in a way, in my later years, I'm returning to this almost physical sensation that I get from different colors. However, this is somewhat different than how the use of colors is being manifested in painting, because it's not the same thing. The way that we experience colors and the way that we express ourselves in colors is completely different. It's like the difference between hearing sound and creating music. The tools that we have as creators are so much more limited than the actual sensational feelings that we receive from nature or from life.
I want to go back to what you said about being obsessive, and this in relation to your technique. Somehow, it seems as if each brush stroke would be a decision you're making at that time, as if each of them would have a meaning of its own. How do you experience color when you're observing it? Do you portray color as seen by you, or do you change color according to the emotions produced while you paint? When does this observation, so to say, becomes a captured experience?
Well, I have to say that for that, we need to understand something which is very crucial about art. Art is not reality. Art is always some sort of an analysis of reality, either an emotional analysis or an analytical analysis. So you cannot refer to colors as something that, you cannot refer to realistic art as something which imitates reality. There's no such thing as reality to imitate. We perceive reality in a certain way, and this perception of reality is what indicates the way that we manifest it in art. We cannot imitate reality. When people say it looks hyper-realistic, what they mean in most cases is that it looks like a photo. And this is definitely not something that I aim at in my work. I'm not interested at all in doing paintings that look like photos, because for that there is photography. And it's a wonderful technique by itself. As for the analysis of color, yes, I definitely use... I'm definitely trying to nail the feeling of a certain color in my work, but it's a lost battle, because color is a physical phenomena, which is a result of how we sense reality. Well, what I have as a painter are mere pigments. These are not. It's not the same tools as in reality. In reality, we have light. And in painting, we don't have light. We have only darkness, in a way. Mm-hmm. And so the second part of your question is whether paint is being used as well as a psychological or as an emotional device. And yes, definitely. I am trying to be righteous as to the depiction of reality, but sometimes it slips. And I would actually say that in art, the things that make art convincing are not the things that go according to the book, but rather those slips, these mistakes, these lies, so to speak, where your intuition or your more elusive understanding is what makes you choose a certain decision. When we talk about color, technically speaking, color is made out of the color, which, by the way, in oil paint, we can never imitate perfectly. But it's also made out of tonality, which means the distance of the color between brightness and darkness. Where does it stand in this spectrum? And this is something that in reality is immensely rich, because light is
infinitive.
Infinitive. Mm-hmm. However, our palette is extremely limited, and also our possibility of presenting light is very limited by definition, because the brightest that we have is the white color. But this is not as bright as light. And the darkest that we have is black, which, by the way, I don't use. Very seldom do I use black. Mm-hmm. So actually, when you try to depict something which feels like light, you need to trick. You need to trick the eye, and you need to trick the brain. And because you need to apply a certain tonality to the color, which does not is not equivalent to the tonality in reality. It's much less rich. So it's a game of limitations, hence the constant frustration.
Following this thought, may I ask one question?
Yes, of course.
About light and darkness, now that you talk about white and black. The human body is an endless source of inspiration because every single bit of it expresses something. You paint nakedness very often. You paint sensual bodies, old bodies, young bodies, and even death bodies. It seems to me that when you are painting nakedness of someone else, you're painting yours too. There's a lot of empathy and understanding of life, and even I dare to say that you surrender when you paint. And there's a wonderful and very successful handling of light, especially when you're painting nudity. My question is, do you consciously use light at night or during day, let's say, as a resource to paint? And does this light shading makes you surrender?
Yes, first of all, I want to say that I don't think that my nakedness is as attractive as my models, unfortunately. But yes, I work with light, and when I work in oil, I work only with natural light. And this is something that I've been doing ever since I started as a professional painter, and that's why the winters are difficult for me, because the days are so much shorter here in Berlin. But light is what sculpts reality, and natural light is so much more richer in color, indeed, and in it's much more tender. And by the way, this is one of the bigger differences of my moving here, because the light in my home country in Israel is way more violent.
This was exactly what I was thinking to myself. How did it affect?
Well, in a way, I don't know if this affected or the fact that that I moved and started. I moved at the age of 40, which is not it's not a child, and in a way, I feel that the biggest change in my work has been happening ever since. I'm not sure it has to do direct. It has to do with light, but it's not just that. It's also just the fact that there is a change, and that life here is much more quiet. And also, when moving here, I left a quite prolific career and life, and all my friends and family, and suddenly, you know, everything is a bit more calm here, but also less phone calls, less nagging, less
social contact.
It's less different. Social contact and less contact, basically. So this isolation, in a way, makes you become a little bit less involved in every little distraction. And in a way, I feel that it helps me in focusing even more, or becoming even more obsessive, and plunging even deeper into what I do. As for the light, yeah, it's different, but you learn to work differently, and in a way, as to what you asked before, you don't really paint reality. You use reality in order to define an alternative reality that hopefully would make sense to the viewer and would say something to the viewer.
That you're communicating, basically, or expressing something.
Basically, I believe that art is useless unless it's a form of communication.
Absolutely.
And this is one of the tragedies of most modern art. And that it doesn't even try to communicate. And by the way,
that you have to explain it.
Exactly.
Right?
And there's a whole business of explaining it. Let's put it that way. Most curators' work is to explain to people why they should actually buy it or be interested in it. I'm sorry, but when I listen to a cantata by Bach, I don't need to be explained. Mm-hmm. When I see a painting by Edvard Munch, I don't need to be explained. when I see a painting by Vermeer, it doesn't matter that he lived in the 17th century and that I don't speak the language and that it's no longer the same world. And nothing of that matters because it speaks in the language of senses, it speaks in the language of emotions. And these languages are universal. They're universal, they transcend time, they transcend culture. And this is the kind of art that I admire the most. And by the way, this is one of the main reasons that I'm actually doing realistic art. We can pretend until, you know, we can pretend that we're not, that we're so beyond that, but we're not. Our brains work in a visual way. We have cells in our brains who are responsible for recognizing faces. Not only that, when we see someone in front of us and they're sad, there are muscles in our face that react to that immediately. Unless we're psychopaths, which is a common thing. Yeah, but possibility as yes. Well. But as for identification or what you said about identifying with the nudes or with the portrayed people, I very often feel as if I'm falling in love with people that I paint. But I have to say, I would restrict myself. It sounds very romantic. But as a matter of fact, it's quite a narcissistic thing, because eventually it is the work, even if you work with a model, to be honest, it's a very lonely thing. And you don't really know what goes through someone else's brains, and not really. So it's just an attempt. Okay. But to be honest, I'm not sure it works that way. We are extremely sensitive to visual things, and I think that we are a realistic animal. It doesn't mean that abstraction is not a value and or valid.
Okay, but let's go back to colors. I'm curious, who are the artists that influenced you in your voyage, let's say, towards a color treatment of colors?
I would say that perhaps the biggest influence is Claude Monet. Mm-hmm. And for a very simple reason, Monet, I think, is the greatest research of light and the greatest researcher of how an atmosphere and a shape can be created from mere color and the feeling of contrast between different colors. I remember a few years ago, there was an exhibition in Vienna, and there were many paintings. It was about Japonisme, about influences from Japanese art. And in one of the walls, there was a beautiful, beautiful painting by Monet of the... Monet used to visit the same hotel in London. Oh. Over the Thames, and he, from very young age, first time when he escaped France in 1871, when he escaped the war, but then he came back as an adult, and he did the bridges, the Parliament buildings, and the bridges over the Thames. Anyways, in this painting, it's a very sort of like mauve, bluish, cold gray London day. Mm-hmm. And then there's suddenly this ray of orange light, which somehow escaped through the clouds and it rattles on the water. And from a distance, for a second, it looks like the real thing. Mm-hmm. Not like a picture, not like it feels like reality, like you're there for a split of second, and then it breaks again. But for a split of second, it is so real that you can almost grasp it. And in a way, this is very meaningful. It's nothing psychological. It's nothing about human communication. But it is very strong regarding the way that we sense the world. Mm-hmm. These moments that suddenly something is beautiful, something is happening, something is real. So I would say that Monet is probably the painter which influences me the most in that respect, but also more and more Mondrian. Mm-hmm. and he's an abstract painter, by the way, okay?
Yeah.
Because of the genius in the way that he spreads or organizes the patches of paint in a way that makes a certain internal sense, which is actually disconnected from reality, but it makes a sense. It's like almost like music.
It's like jazz, right? Like
it's like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it makes this, it's like something builds in your brain, something, it creates a certain echo to something that you already have in your brain, to a structure that you're born with, perhaps. So this is another big influence. I would say that although I'm a realistic painter, I'm not mm-hmm. that influenced color-wise mm-hmm. from the great masters. Mm. And there's a very simple reason for that. Mm-hmm. They had a very limited palette. Mm-hmm. Exactly. If we talk about Rembrandt, for instance, he used 10, 12 pigments his entire life. Mm-hmm. Velázquez in his later years used 6 pigments. That's it. Mm-hmm. On my palette, there are 36 pigments because mm-hmm. they're available. You can buy them. You can use them. So why not, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that this is one of the biggest things that happened in our art history. In when we talk about painting, that in the Impressionist Revolution entered new ways of expression with color.
Absolutely.
And by the way, regarding that, people would think, okay, so there's computer, it has a million other options, and photography, and I agree. Yes, but it doesn't have other things. It doesn't contain, it doesn't have texture. It doesn't have the touch of the material.
Layers.
Sorry?
The layers? Or can you create layers?
The texture, it doesn't have the struggle. When something is done on the computer, it can be redone very easily, erased very easily. When you work in oil, it's a struggle. Every decision is extremely heavy and extremely expensive. When I say expensive, I mean that if you need to change it, you don't just press delete. You need to redo the whole thing. You need to erase it. You need to, you know, it's a very expensive decision. This brings me to what you said at the beginning, that every brush stroke
a decision.
Is a decision. And it's a heavyweight decision in many cases. It might not look heavyweighted, but it is heavy-weighted, mm-hmm. and it doesn't mean that I don't change my mind. It doesn't mean that I don't do layers over layers. I do, but it means that, and it doesn't mean that I don't, many cases, after finishing something, I would say, oh, I wish this whole thing was a bit more like this or like that, but now it's already too late to fix it. But in a way, I feel that when you feel the weight of decision on what you do, you need to be more responsible. And this is what perhaps you meant. I feel very responsible for everything that I do for a very simple reason. I respect the audience. I respect the people that I communicate with, the abstract people that I communicate with, because I want the same respect as a consumer of art. I want the same respect from other artists. And to be honest, what I hate the most in most modern art is that it doesn't respect us as an audience. Of course, there are many examples of great artists that do, but in many cases, it doesn't respect us as artists. It doesn't try to communicate us with us. And in many cases, very openly so. It mocks us.
I'm going to go to this feeling you were trying, or that you clearly transmitted about the moment. About this decision, you know, as a receptor and also as a painter. There is a painting named Portrait of My Teacher. In this portrait, there is an old man sitting alone with himself with a blank stare. You paint in him with great tenderness. Old age seems to be the message of the painting, and you painted it as if you would comprehend what this man is feeling at this time, as if you could read his thoughts. And there's another picture of yours, which is a middle-aged man sitting and dealing with his own thoughts. You titled it Life Itself. And there's this man sitting.
It's actually a girl, by the way.
Oh, it's a girl.
Yeah, and it's not middle age. It's like 40. It's before middle age, I would say. Like, yeah, it is exactly middle age, yeah. Actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's...
It's a girl. I know most people don't. Yeah, she's like asexual in this painting.
Yeah. And so he's sitting she's sitting surrounded by objects of her daily life.
Yeah.
And as if she were questioning her own existence at that precise moment. And again, you capture that moment or that feeling. These moments are powerful, and there are lots of color shades. When does this observation process becomes a capture experience that you're available to transmit in your paintings?
Okay, let's keep the question for a second. I want to first give a bit background for both of these paintings. Mm-hmm. And then remind me the question, please. The first painting is a painting that I did, I think, in 1997, which I was 23, I think. And it is my teacher, Oswald Adler, who was my anatomy teacher. And it's a very early painting. I think I did it in one day, in one sitting, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, in one sitting. And it is in his house, and I loved him.
And you could transmit it because I see him, and I just want to embrace him.
He was a wonderful, wonderful man. He was originally from Brasov, which is now in Romania, and he was my greatest teacher. And I studied anatomy with him, but to be honest, over the years, except for the material that I studied with him, the real things that I studied with him were, or that I learned from him, are deeper than that. And they're about this importance of using criticism and self-criticism in order to improve and in order to learn from great masters. And as a personality, he was an extremely modest person and an amazing professional. He made his living mostly as a graphic designer. He did many of the stamps of Israel and so on when eventually he immigrated. And when I met him, he was in his late 80s already. And there was a very strong bond between us. And I painted him several times. Of course, he hated it because it was hard work, but he played along, and so this is also. I was very, very young, and all these things that you say about identifying with old age and so on, it was not. I didn't do it acknowledgingly. It was very intuitive, to be honest, and perhaps I even tried to make it a bit more romantic than it was, but I didn't manage to do that. As for the latter, the second painting, it's a completely different thing. First of all, it's a huge painting, very big. It's 180 over 180. And it's the first painting of a large series of work that I've been working on since 2016, in which every painting is representing a different age in life. I'm currently working on youth. The last one that I did was old age, and it was composed out of two canvases in this size. As for the life itself, it's the first painting that you were referring to. It is indeed trying to be an existentialist portrayal of how it is to live daily life now. And how we are surrounded by things that are not pretty, not attractive. We're not attractive anymore. We still try to be a bit more, to make it somehow. But basically, life is just a constant affair of nagging and changing passwords and picking kids and carrying plastic bags. And what for? We go back home. She's returning in this painting. She's returning back home. And there's nothing for us there. You know, it's just, we're just dealing with all of this constant bullshit nagging. And what for? So it's actually quite a pessimistic painting. And yeah.
Yeah.
But what was the question then?
The question, you already answered it.
Okay.
The question is intuition. How you were able to transmit these feelings when you were painting. You achieve it without maybe
going for it. Thank you. I'm not sure that this is what I was looking for. But as for intuition, I have to say that it's a very strong word.
Mm-hmm,
and I think that intuition is acknowledgement not yet acknowledged.
Yes.
But it's not, you know, it doesn't come from the air. It's not abstract.
And it seems that maybe this intuition that you were talking about regarding the portrait of your professor, it changed over the years, right? I mean, referring to this ambitious series of yours, The Circle of Life, it seems the way, the process of color, choosing shades and light, it's not that intuitive anymore as it was like 20 years ago.
It's a wonderful observation, which hurts me a lot because it's very true. And, you know, I don't compare myself, but, you know, the early songs of the Beatles, you know, mm-hmm. they're just so youthful and they deal with the basic things that we deal all our lives with love, with loss, with sadness, with loneliness, with whatever. And then the more they grow up, becomes more sophisticated and deals with deeper questions, but also loses something.
It's
you know?
Maybe this naivete.
Exactly. So I lost that. And by the way, it's even worse than that. It takes me so much longer now. Everything takes me so much longer. So yeah, definitely. I think that a lot of the things that I was looking for in terms of beauty and the more, I would say, romantic view on life has disappeared because I just don't. First of all, I'm trying to create beauty out of ugliness now. And then I try to create beauty out of beauty or out of sadness or out of I don't know what. But now I'm not trying to create beauty out of that. I'm trying to create beauty out of the difficulties in life.
It's perhaps a cycle, Abnon. A cycle of life that you go and because you become more conscious and then you surrender.
I also have this as a character. I'm never satisfied. And once I did something, I'm no longer interested in doing it again. And, you know, there are all these discussions that how do you feel about selling your painting? Don't you feel that which painting of yours is your favorite? Frankly, I feel great when I sell a painting because otherwise it's stocked, you know? Nobody sees it. And it doesn't matter what I feel about my paintings. I'm not a customer. It doesn't matter. What I feel about my paintings has to do with how I felt when I did them, not about their quality. And I'm very happy to get rid of my paintings. I'm very happy to exhibit them. I'm very happy when somebody buys them because then I have money to paint new ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yes, there is this thing that at a certain point, I think it's stupid to ignore what you already learned. It is very important to forget what you know in order to make something new. But it's also stupid to ignore what you already know if you know it. And absolutely, my knowledge is much bigger because I've been doing it for, I think, 26 years professionally.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, I have lost naivete. I have lost some, I work slower, I think, in average. And I am definitely more acknowledged than I was. But there's a price to it, by definition, yeah.
We will add a link, of course, to Amnon's website so that our listeners can also enjoy the beautiful paintings and understand a bit more.
I want to say about that, first of all, thank you, and I would love that. Take into consideration that they look different in reality, and they do. I know it's a cliche of painters. Yeah, it always looks better. No, it doesn't always look better in reality, but in some cases it does.
Mm.
By the way, there are some cases in which it looks worse in reality. But
it does.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. I hope that not in mine, but you never know. That's the
Amnon, I have a last question for you. And we were talking before about painting old age. And you paint old age, but you also are able to paint youth. You mentioned that.
I'm doing it now. I'm now working on the next painting of the series, which is youth.
Yeah. But there's a painting before series, probably, that I'm going to refer to.
Yeah.
Is this portrait of a young man dressed in a shirt. And he has he has blue eyes. And he said this is the sight of youth. He's proud and he's sensual and he's invincible.
Isn't he gorgeous?
He's gorgeous.
You know and who he is?
Who is he?
My nephew.
Oh, no,
you're
but
so proud of him.
Yeah.
And you know, and this side, really, he's invincible. He can do everything he wants. And that's youth. And I wanted to ask you, probably you already answered it and it's related, but I was thinking if you do notice that you use other shades of color when you're painting old age, when you're painting dead bodies, or when you're painting youth.
So I will answer it with an example. When I did the large painting from the series Death, I was working with a live model. And of course, you know, I didn't have a corpse in my apartment rotting out for 10 months. Although, by the way, some painters did that. Géricault did that. And Rembrandt, with his anatomy, his first anatomy lesson, we actually know the name of the person, the corpse. We know who he was. It was a criminal that was hung or something like that. So, no, I actually used a very alive model. Who is a good painter, and it was difficult. I was looking for someone in their 80s that would be willing to represent death. Anyways, I eventually found someone, and he was laying like that for a very long time. He was modeling very well, but in order for it to appear as if indeed we're talking about a cadaver, I made a decision, and the decision was to take off much of the reds. In order for it to appear much colder and dead. So this was an acknowledged decision, which was actually easier than I thought it would be, because in most cases I'm trying to be very, very attentive to reality, and here I cheated knowingly. As for in other subjects, I cannot answer that for sure. Might be. I don't remember one point in which I made such a decision in an acknowledged manner.
So, Amnon, thank you very much. You have brightened up our perception. So, before we finish our interview, we have two questions. Please close your eyes and think of a question related to color that you would like to ask to one of our subsequent guests. Your choice will be among three of them: a renowned female abstract Mexican painter, a prominent U.S. American hair colorist, and the third one is Mexico's leading curators, one of Mexico's leading curators specialized in modern and contemporary art.
Okay. So I need to think of a question regarding colors.
Yeah, and to whom would you like to ask?
To the curator. And the question is, do you think that colors, specific colors, like blue, would have a different absolute or a different... either blue or red or yellow, any one of these colors would have the same meaning to all people. And I will give a little bit of an example. When we say red, we all think of spicy, for instance. And I'm wondering, do you think it's a cultural thing, or do you think it's something that is inherent in all humans? Is it objective? The way that we refer to colors emotionally something universal? That's the question.
So perfect. Thank you, Amnon, for a great interview.
Thank you very much. My pleasure. Thank you for this opportunity.
And now we come to the end of our first episode. Thank you so much, Dorit, for co-hosting this chapter with me.
Thank you, Ceci, for inviting me, and thank you, Amnon. It was a pleasure. And of course, thank you to the listeners.
Thank you wherever you are and having allowed us to share time with you. We'll see you next time and have a good one.